F2. Number 23A.
Let's go to the next epistle, and that's Hebrew. Nobody really knows who has written that epistle to the Hebrews. There are all sorts of conjectures who has written it. Some say it was Paul, some say it couldn't possibly be Paul. Well, I don't know it. Nobody knows it. Doesn't matter. But the interesting part about this epistle is that it seems to be the most balanced, the most exquisitely balanced presentation of metaphysics which appears in the whole Bible. There's nothing so balanced, systematic, orderly, all-encompassing in all its categories as this epistle to the Hebrews. It's just one marvel. I can't take all the various aspects with you because it will be involving too much, but I just try to sketch the big lines of what Hebrew wants to say. Hebrew is written apparently to the Hebrews, to those coming from the Old Testament. And this epistle tries to show the science of how to step out orderly, systematically, out of the Old Testament into the New Testament. That is, how to perform, so to say, that translation within us from the old dispensation thinking, that thinking within the old dispensation, within the Old Testament, so that's where we accept Christ's way of life. He does that, and by showing Hebrews in three parts. The first part, which only takes the first chapter, then the main body of the epistle from chapter 2 and to chapter 12, that is the main part, and then the end chapter 13 as a third part. What are these three parts? The first part, the short part, shows us the whole proposition of that scientific way of salvation from the level of divine science. It's a very divine level. Then, in the second part, the main part, that part which we really want to consider in more detail, there he shows that the subject from the standpoint of absolute Christian science. And you know that absolute Christian science is that level of thought which teaches you the absolute facts, the absolute method, how to get hold of true ideas. Whereas in the last part, it's written on the plane of Christian science, and where he translates, therefore, divine science to the point of the human level, where he shows which qualities are necessary, to go this way of life, as you will see as we go through. So let's first take part one, where he shows now the scientific man, or the scientific way of salvation for men from the divine standpoint. Now you can easily see what the divine standpoint will tell us about men namely that man is the Son of God, ever was the Son of God, ever remains the Son of God, and therefore as the Son of God was always reconciled with God, was always far above the human, and was always eternal. This is what he shows first. You see, that's the divine level, where there is no question of how to work it out. The divine level just shows you how, from God's point of view, things are. He shows that fundamentally God has a son, and that is the only man God knows. See, the subject is still the scientific concept of man, the science of man, you see. From the divine point of view, God has just a son. That's what he is interested in. And that whole first chapter, it just teems with that statement, so to say, that really God has a son. That God has an expression of himself, an ideal of himself, and the ideal of God is the Christ man. It's the Christ man. All what we can conceive of from God's point of view, which is divinely ideal, that's the Son of God. That's the Son, that's the divine man. And so here he shows how Jesus demonstrated that sonship on the divine plane. First he shows, you see, we are on the plane of divine science, and so he just first shows Jesus as exemplifying that Son of God on the divine plane. And he depicts him just always on that high level, without yet dropping it to the level of absolute Christian science. Hebrews is written by somebody whom we don't know, who knew the four sides of the holy city inside and outside, just as well as we know our pockets. Everything he writes is always in the four. Every little detail he writes is in the four. Only here and then he goes even into further and further details and may sometimes present something in the seven. But what he has to present is always the four. Always the four. So the level of divine science which he now presents, he presents it from the four too. The Word in divine science, the Christ in divine science, Christianity in divine science, and science in divine science. He presents Jesus as having demonstrated that level of divine science, as presenting the man of God, the Son of God, on that level. And so that man of God, that Son of God, as the Word sense, is depicted here, that through the consciousness of the Son, the only true creation is revealed. He shows that only through that, you see, the Word is the Creator. Without the Word, nothing has been made that has been made. That's how John starts his Gospel. And here he shows that through Jesus, demonstrating what the Son of God is, he really revealed and created the true world, created what reality really is. So that by God made the world through his Son. Then he says, but that Son was always reflecting the Christ in divine science. Namely, he was always at one with God. He was always reconciled with God. He doesn't show it how to reconcile. He just shows from that high level that the Son of God fundamentally is one with God, reconciled with God. He depicts him as sitting at the right hand of Majesty on high. He has brought about the purgation of sins. He's completely sinless. He's completely reconciled. He's completely atoned. He is even the image and likeness of God, the effulgence of God's splendor and the stamp of God's very being. So you see how he depicts that which we in consciousness perhaps have to depict first, that we say, now, if I want to work out really what the true man is, I have jolly well to start on the highest level I can. Namely, I first have to realize what is the Son of God. What is meant by the Son of God? We begin to see that God made everything. That God made the Son of God. Second, that this man of God is always one with God. Never fallen away, never returning to God. He's always one with God. He's always sitting at the right hand of Majesty on high. You see, that's where we sit. That's where we sit in divine science. Then he shows him from the side of Christianity by saying that wonderful thing, namely, that the Son has inherited the kingdom of God and is far above the angels. Far above the angels. It's all about angels, and always saying that the Son is above the angels, that the angels serve that Son of God. You see? Well, angels are what Mrs. Eddy calls, what do they call them? God's thoughts passing to man. Huh? You see? It's God's thoughts passing to man. Spiritual intuition, perfect and so on. Well, he sees that the true man is higher than that. That the true man is above the angels. And that God's thoughts serve that consciousness of the Son. I don't know if you can fathom it. You see, what he really means here, he means, well, the Son of God in divine science is the idea of God, and not good thought, not the realization of good, not our understanding of good. It's much more than that. It's that which God knows about his Son. And that is far above angels. Angels in the Bible are those inspirational divine thoughts which come and go. The Son remains. Angels always come and go. An intuition always has a beginning and an end. You see, that's the angels. But what he shows here is that the Son is eternal. So from the fourth side of his city, he depicts the Son as eternal. But thou art the same, and thy years shall have no end. So the Christ is eternal, an eternal fact. Doesn't come and go. Angels come and go. You see? Our realization of what we are and what man is, they come and go. But what we can see, that the idea man as the Son of God is eternal. And that the idea man of God exists independent if we think about it or not. Even independent if we think about man rightly or not rightly. Man exists as an idea in the bosom of God. Man exists, you see, as an idea. Now, an idea is without beginning, without end. An idea is independent of thinking, independent of all that. It's only dependent on God. So, that's what he first depicts. You see, the Son of God from all four sides. small foresight. That's the word which says all. Only when we really begin to see the Son of God, we really begin to see what creation is. Then we see that the Son of God is always one with God, never fallen away, always sitting at the right hand of His Majesty on high. Then in the third place, from the Christianity point of view, we see that far above the realm of good thoughts, of angels, and therefore from the point of view of science, which is always depicting being, we see He's eternal. So it's an eternal idea. Well, I guess this is what we have considered so often in Christian Science, and actually mostly we like to consider man from the plane of divine science, because that gives us the sublimest sense, and the human mind sometimes likes to have that that sublime sense, and that's right. But then comes the question, but how can I realize that? How can I make that divine standpoint my own? I've only seen it up to now. How can I inherit that kingdom? And that is the purpose of part two of Hebrews. In part two of Hebrews, he gives the method of how to demonstrate this altitude. And you will see that at the end of this part, we are again there where we sit, where we then sit at the Majesty, at the right hand of the Majesty on high. So part two really is the most important part, so to say, because it teaches us the science of how to demonstrate the idea of man in its science. Now here, again, he does it through the four. He shows that way of salvation, I call part two Christ's method of salvation, that method of salvation is a four phases, so to say, which I have depicted here. First, that there exists a way of salvation. See, first of all, we have to see that there exists a way of salvation. Because so many may say, well, there doesn't exist a way of salvation. Either you are saved or you are not saved, or either God pleases him to save one and the other not. But what Hebrews wants to show is that there exists a way of salvation for everyone. And that way of salvation is the same way for everyone. I think on this point he lays quite a bit of stress that the way of salvation is the same way for everyone. That not everyone has another way for salvation. I always upset people when I say that in science not all roads lead to Rome. I view that saying over here says, well, all roads lead to Rome. It isn't so. I think the Bible tells us there is only one way leading to Rome. Only one way leading to salvation. Jesus said, and I am that way. Well, he was only one way. He wasn't a multitude of ways. There is only one scientific method to get there. And if there would not be one way to Rome, if there would be many, then there would be no science, and then we could not learn it. We couldn't learn it. So he sees it. He says, there is one way of salvation. And he shows that way of salvation can only be trodden if we have the same and one high priest. That's the second point. You see now the Christ. He calls it the high priest. The high priest is just a biblical term for the Christ. It says there is but one high priest, one that leads us on that way. Not many, only one. And then he shows that that way leads us into a true sanctuary, and that that sanctuary is but one sanctuary, and not many sanctuaries. And then, lastly, he shows that, after all, everything combines into one perfect being, that from everlasting to everlasting, perfect being always existed. Can you see why, when one touches the fourth side of the Holy City, natural Christian science, that that is always the link over to divine science. That links us over to divine science. So, this is the way Hebrew here is built up, through these four big subjects. But when he presents these four subjects, see, the way, then the high priest, and the sanctuary, then the aim of it, the perfect being, he always does it through four steps. Through four steps. Every one of them. Always through four. And they are, and actually what is then the beauty of it, always through the same four steps. The same four steps. What are they? He always shows that in every one of these four, he shows the following four steps. He says, first of all, God had revealed it to us. The word, you see. It is a revelation of God which I show you. Then he always says the second, the Christ, then he says, and Jesus accepted that revelation and went that way. He proved that that revelation was true. And then the third step is always that he says, and what Jesus did, you all can do and must do. See, makes it now universal, brings it down to every man, says, what the Christ has done, that is the pattern what we all have to do. So all men have to do what Jesus did, and Jesus did that he fulfilled that what God revealed. That's not very difficult, is that? Just one sequence, you see, that he shows. Well, what he's presenting is not somebody's concept of salvation. That it is a revelation of God. That's the word. Then he shows Jesus accepted that revelation of God and believed in it and therefore went that way and proved that it is possible to go that way and that it leads into heaven. Second, that's the Christ. Then comes the third, which says, now what Jesus has done is the pattern for you. Now you use that Christ too. You use it too. And you can use it. And if you use it as Jesus used it in the same way, you get there as Jesus got there. That's what he always says in the third. And then in the fourth, naturally, because it's in Christianity here, he says, and the power which helps you to do it is through faith, and not through the works of the law. He gives now the scientific use, the scientific instrument with which to do it through faith. We would say through spiritual understanding. Now, if you take the chart 2 on page 166. If you take the chart too and we just have a look at it, you have in that very little chart, you have really the substance of the epistle to the Hebrews. Just reduced and reduced and reduced. You see that first, on the top, we have the word, namely the way of salvation. See, the way of salvation is the word. It's the way of life, the ordered unfoldment from beginning to fulfillment. That's what he shows there in the first more or less three chapters. Then after those few chapters he shows the high priest, the Christ. You will notice at once when you read it that the subject changes and it's all about the high priest, the old high priest of the Old Testament, the new high priest of the New Testament, and it's all about the nature of the high priest and so on. So you can see how the subject changes. Then when he has told us everything about the high priest, then he says, well, in which sanctuary does this high priest live and serve? Now you come to the realm in which this high priest lives and moves and has its being. The realm, Christianity. You always know Christianity has to do with the realm of the idea, symbolized in the Bible by the sanctuary, by the old sanctuary and by the new sanctuary. Then he then shows how to get out of the old sanctuary into the new sanctuary. The old sanctuary of the old dispensation to the new sanctuary of the new dispensation. Now, let's take this chart 2 as a basis and just see how he always evolves his subject in an ordered way. We read this chart vertically. We begin with the word, you see, go down vertically. In that whole column is shown the way of salvation. In other words, that there is a way of salvation which has been revealed to Israel and to the Hebrews. Now, how is that way of salvation shown? First, see, he begins to show in the first square, so to say, that God has revealed the new way. So always the first thing is that he shows that way has been revealed. And he is quite emphatic in the text then to show that there is no mistake about it, that in the Bible God has revealed himself. And that God has revealed himself as a way of salvation. And that God also bore witness, both with signs and wonders, and with diverse miracles. And that therefore the way has been shown and is to be seen by everyone who has eyes to see. And so ask them not to neglect, you see, such a revelation, to take heed of what the Bible has shown as a revelation. Then we come to the next point, B, where it shows that Jesus pioneered the way for us all. That really Jesus, so to say, took possession of this revelation. That he really accepted it and meant it. That he didn't neglect, as the others, such a great revelation. He asked us to see that Jesus really pioneered along that way. And in order to do that, he subjected everything in his life to that way. You hear very much in that tone, always that tone, that he subjected everything to that way. You see the Christ which is just willing to be that lamb that lays down everything which stands in the way of the Christ revelation. And so he became a leader, and he was not ashamed to call us brethren. Yeah. So then you go further to see, you see, where we see that we can all think that the emphasis really should be on we can all accept this way and must not shut ourselves off from it. Hebrews then goes on to say that we all can do what Jesus did.